As you write your life story, you're far from finished. Are you looking to close the book on your job? Maybe turn a page in your career? Be continued at the Georgetown University School of Continuing Studies. Our professional master's degrees and certificates are designed to meet you where you are and take you where you want to go. At Georgetown SCS, the learning never stops, and neither do you. Write your next chapter. Be continued at scs.georgetown.edu/podcast.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to the Food Heaven Podcast,
your online resource for inclusive and accessible wellness. We are back. We have another episode for you. And it's actually quite funny because I don't think we've ever announced that for the previous three episodes, we've actually been doing a grooming series. And so we did skincare, dental care, hair care. And today we are talking about vaginal care. So it's funny because we're announcing this within the last episode of the series. But it does all kind of make sense for those of y'all that are thinking, wow, these girls are really going off the rails. Like, we planned this as part of a grooming series. And I think this episode was the one that our listeners were the most excited about because y'all submitted so many questions.
Yep.
And our guest today is Dr. Heather Irobunta, who is an OBGYN.
Yes, Dr. Heather is based in New York, and she has worked with thousands of patients, whether it's being an active duty member of the Army and also New York City Health and Hospitals. And she has the best personality. And it's interesting because she said this was her low energy. And I was like, well, girl, this is you low energy. You need right. to give me some of your high energy because my baseline is a lot lower. So in today's episode, we covered everything, all of your questions answered. So we go through when you should start getting your GYN exams. Also, there's a lot of confusion about pap smears, how often she clears up all the clutter with very specific recommendations. We talk about trauma in GYN care and how oftentimes people will act like things aren't going to be painful, or they don't offer solutions, or they don't let you advocate for yourselves. I even bring up this question of these creepy gynecologists and how to kind of suss out who's a creep and who's not. We get into everything from how to clean your vagina, whether you have to clean it, yoni eggs, vaginal steaming, is it safe, birth control. For folks who are getting a lot of yeast infections or recurrent BV, she has answers. We get into vaginal discharge, what's normal, are menstrual cups safe, tips for postpartum vaginal health, what vaginal changes you can expect as we get older, the fertility test everybody needs to get. We get into ovarian cyst, recommendations for brands of lube. I mean, the conversation was perfection. And not only are you going to want to listen to this one till the end, I already know you're going to want to share this one with every woman in your life because it was that good.
Yeah, it was so good. And before we get into the episode, I want to highlight a listener review. This one is from RuggyYG123. And they say, my favorite podcast. I look forward to it every week. Somehow the topic always resonates or relates to something that's been on my mind. Thank you for leaving that review. Y'all go on iTunes, drop 5 stars, leave us some words. We love reading them. And without further ado, we're going to get into the episode. So Heather, you have so many resources for women's health on social media, and it's a really smart way to make a lot of this information more accessible to people. So what made you start putting out this information online? Because I feel like, especially for doctors, I feel like they're just always busy running around. It seems like they don't have time for anything. So it's really cool that you're able to like integrate social media into your work.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is busy. So I feel like I'm wearing like 5 hats. But for me, it's really important because I feel like oftentimes all of this information is gatekept, right? In a weird way, right? So I'm like, we all should know how our body functions. We all should know like what a period is, what ovulation is, just what is considered normal, what's not. And a lot of times we don't get that from, like, you know, sex ed or health ed in school, or from your parents, because your parents don't know, you know, things like that. And so I just thought that I shouldn't be holding on to this information. I should make it accessible. And more my patients were coming in saying, oh, I saw that my favorite influencer or someone said that she had endometriosis, or she's having issues with her periods, or she's pregnant, and I want to know more information. And I'm like, well, maybe I should give this information to people where they're actually finding information, which is online.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Makes sense. Are you also on TikTok?
Oh, I'm on TikTok, which is funny because it's like a whole struggle twerk situation. I'm all like, let me shake my one butt cheek and tell you about your period. It's like a hot mess.
You gotta do what you gotta do. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I enjoy it. So it's like, it's serious, but not, as in I'm giving you good information, but a lot of times it's like I'm following whatever trends. I'm just having a good time.
So. You're having fun with it. And that's what's exactly. most important. Yeah, I think that's great. Okay. We have so much to cover, and we figured we get started with the basics. So number one is, because I have a friend actually who's never been to the gynecologist. How early?
That happens.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah. How early and often should someone be seeing a gynecologist?
Okay. So the way how we like to look at it is that your first gynecology appointment, if possible, should not be an appointment that you're actually going to be getting an exam. Hmm. So the recommendation is, for those of you guys who have children, or those of you who are younger, maybe in high school or whatnot, is that we actually want you to go to the gynecologist as a teenager. Not that you need to like have someone examining you, that's not important, but to come to see us, to get to know us. We can go over what normal things are like in terms of your periods, if you're having any pain, what to expect. And we want one appointment like that in your teenage years, but your first exam should be around age 21, unless you're having issues before then. Okay. And that's when you get your first pap smear.
Okay. And then what about the frequency of pap smears and any other tests that we should be getting? Every time I go, I'm honestly hearing something different. 5 years, 3 years, 1 year. Like, what is the updated recommendation?
Right. And so this is where it gets confusing, because what's funny is that, like, I trained not that long ago, but quite a few years ago, and they were changing the recommendations almost yearly in terms of the pap smear guidelines, just because pap smears are screening tests for cervical cancer. And we've learned so much information about it over the last few decades, because we've done so many pap smears. And so we know kind of what the process is for things to develop from slightly abnormal cells to cancer. So we know that we were being very, very aggressive in our screening before. So now what we recommend is, if you're under the age of 30, that and you have a normal pap smear, you don't need to come in to get one until 3 years. So like every 3 years under the age of 30, if it's normal. And we're not actually testing for HPV, which is a virus that some strains can make you at increased risk for cervical cancer. We don't screen for that until after age 30, because we know that under age 30, most of us are very, very much able to clear that infection on our own without any sort of intervention from a doctor. So that's the reason why we screen every 3 years and we don't screen for HPV. After age 30, it's every 5 years, and that's if we screen for HPV as well. So that's if it's normal. If it's abnormal, it depends on what the abnormality we see in the cells are, because there are a variety of different types, like about 10 different types of abnormalities we can see, from being like almost normal to like very, very concerning, like cancer. And so depending on what we see with those, we'll determine what interval or what time frame we'll be screening for, and what we're screening for, and what we do.
Okay. And then aside from the pap smear, I feel like that's kind of the go-to test. Are there like other tests after 21 that people should be getting regularly, or is that the main one?
Oh, so even before 21, and before 21, you don't necessarily need an exam for it. But a lot of times after age 21, we do the testing with an exam, just because it's like we're already down there and it doesn't really increase the amount of time of the exam. Like usually a lot of times the same swab you do for the pap smear can do it, but things like sexually transmitted infections. So things like What we swab vaginally for are things like gonorrhea, chlamydia. We also check for another STD called trichomonas, or trichomoniasis is the infection. There's also blood tests that we do, like HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, syphilis. All these things you should be getting checked out, especially if you're sexually active. And especially in the ages between 18 and 25, you're at higher risk for things like chlamydia and gonorrhea. It's actually very, very prevalent in that age group. So we do recommend that. When you're under the age of 21, a lot of times we can do that testing through urine, like for gonorrhea and chlamydia. You don't even have to have a pelvic exam for that.
When I was running my private practice, I always noticed that around this time was when I got the most people who were interested in working with me as a dietitian. And I think what happens is it's New Year's resolutions. People start out on these restrictive diets and then they realize, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I want to have a good relationship with food and with my body, and I'm ready to seek out support. So my practice would always get really busy around this time of year. Having said that, I know there's also a lot of people who maybe wanted to reach out and work with a dietitian, but never did. It could be that they didn't have the time or the resources, or it just didn't fit into their schedule. If you fall into either of those categories and you want to have a healthier relationship with food at a fraction of the cost, I want to introduce you to the Way app. Way is a mindful eating app that helps people find peace in their relationships with food and their body. They do this through helping you listen to your body using a combination of intuitive nutrition and behavior science in a simple and thought-provoking experience from three pathways, which include body feels, emotional eats, and mindset shifts. Way creates a safe, non-judgmental environment immediately, and you never have to step on a scale, count a calorie, and it will never tell you what to do. It's literally the opposite of a restrictive diet. 74% of people who use Way notice that they're thinking differently about what they eat, or they're actually eating differently, whether that be at the grocery store or at a restaurant. And this all happens within the first week. I spoke to the founder of Way. I spent an hour with him on a call to make sure this is something that aligns with Food Heaven's values. And I can confidently say we highly recommend this app. For a limited time only, when you visit eatmyway.com, you'll receive 30% off your subscription and a 1 week free trial. That's only $6.99 a month for Way to help you find more peace in your relationship with food and your body. That's eatmyway.com, eatmyway.com, to get 30% off and a 1 week free trial for a limited time only. Now let's get to the episode.
Now, a lot of our listeners had questions about advocating for yourself in medical settings, because I think especially for Black women, there's a lot of trauma related to going to the doctor's office, and it's really hard to communicate your needs effectively because it could just be like very scary, very intimidating. So do you have any suggestions for like how to get that conversation going, or like things that patients can do to feel a little more confident?
So one big thing I like to tell people first off is that sometimes we get stage fright, right? Because when there's a power dynamic in the room, like, yeah, or, and even if you're just like a naturally shy person or whatnot, you just don't like to, you know, go out of your way, or yeah, I get it. Trust me. I was there before I was a doctor. Like, I now have no shame, but before, like, I used to feel kind of that same anxiety. I recommend writing your questions down in like your note section of your phone or something like that, like, or, you know, a piece of paper or something like that. Like, know what you want to say, because sometimes, like, even if you had every intention on asking a question, you might just get overwhelmed by the situation and then forget what you want to say. And so it's really important to write down the questions that you have and make sure that they're answered. Another thing is remembering that doctors are also humans. I am a human being. That scary white dude who maybe your doctor is also a human. Like, remember that we are humans. We like, you know, go to the bathroom just like you do. We need to be hydrated just like you do. All of the same things. We get scared as well. So I think remembering that is helpful. And then knowing that that doctor that you're, or, you know, medical provider that you're standing in front of is not the end all be all your medical care, right? So like, even if you get an answer that you're not really comfortable with, or if you don't have the interaction that you feel like you should be, that person is not the only doctor that you can see. Right. Even if you don't have insurance, even if you don't have good insurance, you know, even if you don't have money, whatever the case is, don't, you know, think that you're not entitled to anything better than what's in front of you, because, you know, there may be another person in the practice, another provider that can, that you can talk to, that you relate with better. Even if there isn't anybody, there's patient advocates that you can contact if you're feeling like things are not going well. There's a head nurse, somebody in that place can help you bridge that gap. So just don't feel like all is lost if you have kind of an off interaction with the provider who's sitting in front of you.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And I think especially with like pain management, because like, you know, someone might go in for like a pap smear, or in my case for an IUD, and it was just like excruciating. And I've had several situations where providers are like, oh, you're fine, or it's really not a big deal. It's almost over, like they kind of disregard that pain. So what can patients do? Like if, you know, if they're trying to seek some pain relief, like are there options available for some of these procedures that they can ask for?
Oh, so this is one of my favorite things to talk about, because it's, trust me, I've had like the same exact situations. Like I had an IUD place years ago. It was eye opening to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
I was an OBGYN resident, right? And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I put these in, I know they're not fun. And I've always been honest with my patients, like, it's not a breeze. Like, this is not pleasant. Like, you know, yeah, like, cause I feel like that it's just wrong to not be very upfront about that. And yes, some people are going to be okay, but like most of us, it's not a pleasant experience, right? So one big thing I always tell people too, is that if you have any history of like a traumatic experience, like not only with like within an exam, like a GYN exam, but in general, anything regarding kind of your genitals, that's something you may want to broach if you feel comfortable. And you don't have to go into details about what happened. You can just say, listen, I've had like a few bad experiences when it comes to exams or procedures, and I'm very nervous and anxious about what's going on here. And then a lot of times there's things that people can offer you depending on what they have available. Sometimes it can be a local anesthetic. So that would be like actually like injecting like lidocaine in the area to see if that helps. Sometimes it's a topical anesthetic. Sometimes they'll have you take some, it's, I don't think it helps that much, but for some people it does, like taking like some ibuprofen or some sort of medication before that. Sometimes people offer things like nitrous, which is like laughing gas with it. It depends on, unfortunately, your insurance coverage sometimes, and also the facility that you're in, if they're equipped to take care, you know, to give you some sort of anesthetic. But having that conversation and asking them what they can do to help you opens a lot of doors. And unfortunately, it should be guided by us as the providers. Like, we should be leading that conversation instead of patients. Like, we should be the ones to say, hey, like, so you're getting a procedure, and this may be like anywhere from not that bad to, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever experienced in my life. And here are some things that we can offer you to make it better. Cause I've had patients tell me, like, when I'm like, okay, like I can put some numbing medication in the area and stuff like that, they're like, oh, just do it. And I'm like, are you sure? And they're like, yeah. But that was their choice. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think, unfortunately, we don't offer that choice very often. And then we tell people, oh, like this shouldn't be that bad. And then you're wondering if you're crazy for having such a horrible, painful experience, when it's like very, very common as someone who puts IUDs in all the time, where it's like, that is not a pleasant experience. And I'm a person who had one too, and it wasn't a pleasant experience. So I think really trying to ask what options you have for pain control, also knowing that you can stop the procedure at any time is important. It is your body. You still have agency over it. You still have autonomy over it. You should not feel like you can't say no. Just like you can say no in sexual encounters or outside of an exam room, outside of a hospital, you are able to say no inside, especially if you're doing something that is completely elective, like getting a pap smear or getting an IUD or whatnot. Like, you do not have to complete that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just feel like we need more of these conversations, because this is honestly the first time I'm even hearing this. Like, you can say no, or advocating for yourself, because I've also had horrible experiences. And this is kind of a random observation. I don't know if it's a question, but most of the time my bad experiences have been from men gynecologists who try to tell me like, oh, it's no big deal, it's not painful. Or when I say, you know, actually, I know myself and I'm going to have a hard time with this, they offer me like an ibuprofen or something that's laughable. And also a lot of these men are creepy. I'm sorry. Like, I've had like these male gynecologists who I later look and see they have like these very creepy, like these old white men, like very creepy reviews. And I'm not saying that's always the case, or it's just inappropriate comments, or I don't know. It just seems like a violation, the whole thing. As someone who is a gynecologist, and maybe this is reaching, but like, how do you decipher who is a creep or
not? I mean, that's a great question. It's really hard, but it's very interesting you say that, because I feel like it's kind of what guided me into gynecology in a way. So when I was in between my first and second year of med school, right, I kind of always have been interested in like, you know, reproductive health, things like that, just because I didn't know that much about it. So it was like the thing that I think like scared me the most. And I felt like, and then I got very interested in it. But I had a really like awful experience in between my first and second year of med school when I was doing my basic training for the military. So I was a military gynecologist as well. Like, your girl's been a lot of places, but this totally told me like our system is broken for GYN and we need to fix it, because I was randomly selected during my basic training to get a pap smear. Who the hell does that? Like, who randomly selects people to get, like, I was not due for one, but the Army took like 20 of us who were at basic training that year and was like, you have to get a pap smear, we own your body, whatever. We go to this clinic and we're all lined up in front of exam rooms, like one next to the other, right? And we're told to go in, undress from the waist down, sit on this like exam table and put on a sheet. I was on my period, and my periods are epic. I talk about my periods on my stories all the time because I like to overshare about my bodily function. But yes, my periods are heavy. They're just wild, wild experiences. And so I was like in the second day of my period or something like that. And I'm like, and I pull one of the assistants aside. I'm like, hey, I'm on my period. Like, I have a tampon in, like, I don't want to take it out, like, until we're like ready to do the exam. Do you still want to do the exam? They're like, yes, we can still do the exam. You need to take it out, like everything off and out. And I'm like, I'm bleeding. Like, how long am I going to be sitting here? They're like, oh, it's going to be quick. Yeah. An hour and a half later, sitting on a bed, like bleeding all over the place.
Oh my God.
And I was like, so embarrassed. So like, I couldn't get up because I was afraid that I was going to put like leak blood all over the floor. And then when I came in, like when the like doc came in, he was like old white man, and he was like, and I was like, I'm so sorry, like I know that there's like a lot of blood and like whatever. And he was like, oh, don't worry, it's fine, it's probably not that bad. And then as soon as I put my legs up, he was like, oh, it's soupy in here. And I was like, exactly. I wanted to cry, this is actually the worst experience ever. And I was like, no one should ever experience that, no one should ever deal with that. Like, we have to do better. This is not any way that any person should be treated. No woman, no man, no one should be treated like that. And so it's like, and it was creepy, and it was weird, and it was messed up. And I just feel like, you know, we have to do better. But in terms of figuring out whether someone's a creep or not, I mean, Google reviews.
Good place to start.
Good place to start.
Not like after
asking around the question mark. But sometimes, you know, you end up in situations. And then also too, yes, unfortunately, gynecology has been a male dominated like medical field for a long time, which is weird and messed up.
Makes no sense.
But there's also a lot of women who carry on the work of the patriarchy in our field, because I heard some of the most awful comments about kind of how people react to pain or experiences or birth or whatever from female gynecologists, where it's like, I don't know how she got pregnant if she can't tolerate it, like a pelvic exam, because I would hope that her partner's penis is bigger than da 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 da. Where you're like, that's really awful. Because one thing I like to remind people who get really upset, they're like, I'm so sorry, like, that I'm not handling this well. It's like, girl, and like, and they're like, they're okay with having like intercourse and they don't have any problems with that. And I'm like, girl, we don't have like the stadium lights on, your legs up,
right?
Like, two people in the room that you don't know, and right, throwing instruments in there. Usually if you're having a sexual encounter, it's we set the mood. Sometimes dinner's involved.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's not like this experience where it's very sterile and cold and bright even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm just disgusted.
Yeah, I love telling that story because that's true. And it's so, so personal true. Because it's true. And so many people have similar stories or worse stories, which is messed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad because it shouldn't, there should be the utmost sensitivity involved with GYN care. And I just feel like there's not. But I appreciate doctors like you who are changing things and making it just much more approachable and comfortable. Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about cleansing your vagina. So
another favorite topic of
I know. Right. So my friend, her mom would always say a healthy vagina cleans itself. Having said that,
smart woman,
right?
Smart mom.
There's so many. And so my friend will always say that. She's like, a healthy vagina cleans itself. But there are so many products everywhere you go, left and right. And they're talking about, oh, you should use this or that or deodorize, whatever. What are your thoughts on that?
Hello, capitalism, y'all. Everybody's trying to make a coin.
Right.
Yes.
Every single body. Everybody's trying to make a dollar. Okay. And that's where that stems from. It's like, soap is not a bad thing in general, right? In general life. So soap is really not a bad thing in terms of washing most parts of your body, right? But nothing should go inside your vagina because yes, it cleans itself. Usually if we go in there and do anything like in terms of trying to cleanse, it revolts because it doesn't like to be bothered. It likes to cleanse itself. And if there's something that's concerning you about the smell or the feel of the vagina, you probably need to see a doctor instead of going to the feminine care aisle or whatever they want to call it. The thing is, though, healthcare is expensive, right? And so it breeds kind of this culture of, let me see what I could do myself because I don't want to necessarily spend the time, money, or shamed or have a bad experience in a gynecologist's office. So let me see what I can do for myself in these aisles. And unfortunately, most people do more harm than good in these aisles because it's not necessary. And then the other part of it is, so the inside's the vagina and then the outside's the vulva, right? And like, especially, and I noticed this is something that I actually talked about with one of my dermatologist friends who actually is a Black woman as well. And we were talking about kind of in general, how we as folks of color, especially Black folks, we get really aggressive sometimes with the cleanliness of our skin and our body. Like, and it's not a bad thing, but it's sometimes we do harmful things to ourselves in the name of cleanliness. And then it makes you wonder where that comes from, right? Mm-hmm. Like why we feel like unless we literally scrub the top layers off of our skin or put something that's really strong on our vulva or near our vaginas or in our vaginas, do we feel like we're clean, right? Like, because the joke that we all like tend to have is like, oh, white people don't like, you know, they don't wash their legs, they don't do this, right, they don't do that. But sometimes they're not dealing with some of the skin conditions we are that we do because we use these harsh chemicals and these harsh practices to cleanse ourselves. Like, what is that? Like, what, like, I feel like somebody needs to like dig deeper. But honestly, with the vulva on the outside, right? All you need is like a very light cleanser. And all these pH balance, whatever, it's all hoopla BS. Yeah. It's BS, y'all. Okay. Like, your body knows how to balance its own pH. And if it's not doing so, it's because there's usually an infection that is causing it to be imbalanced. And you know what? You don't need a cleanser. You need antibiotics, girl. Like, you need antibiotics. It's not a cleanser that's going to fix that. And then on the outside, like, people don't realize your vulva is very, very sensitive skin. It's like baby skin, as I say. I'm like, please, like, if there's a smell that happens, it's not time to get like, you know, the strongest cleanser in the world to fix that. It's actually, you have to go more gentle because it's your body's way of telling you that something is out of whack and it just needs a like to chill, right? Yeah. And usually either just water, and if you need an antibiotic or an antifungal, you can get that, or something that's unscented, doesn't even lather up like that. And yes, do some of those cleansers in that feminine aisle do that? Maybe, but they're a lot more expensive than like some like Cetaphil, which is cheaper than most of them. And it'll not only cleanse there, it'll cleanse your whole body. And it's, and you just really want to stay simple and base, like very clean. And I feel like all of these multi-scented things, Summer's Eve, Vagisil, and I know I'm going to get flamed for this, some other ones out there that are also owned by, I hate to do it.
Well, I have it in my bathroom, but, you know, I fell into the trap of capitalism, I have to say, because I know water is best, but I'm like, child, let me support Black business. Let me go low.
Listen, I almost did too. That's why I say I'm not above it. I'm never above it. But the thing that I say, though, is I say this stuff with an asterisk, right? If it ain't bothering you, I'm not coming for you. So if you use it and you're fine, I love that journey for you. I'm happy. I'm not going to tell you to change it. But if you come to me and you're having problems, I'm going to tell you what you got to change.
There we go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's simple. It's like, because people are like, well, that doesn't work for me. And I'm like, I'm just telling you, or I haven't had a problem using any of these products. And I'm like, I'm just telling you what will work for probably 95% of the population. And the product that some of these people are using will work for about 50% of the population, maybe even less. You know what I mean? I have to go by what I know, like, will work for most people.
Yeah. It's so interesting with the Black people and the cleanliness, because you will get reamed or like your Black card revoked. Okay. Like, whenever I tell my friends I don't use a washcloth, they are like grasping their pearls. Sometimes I do, but like, it's not my default. I grew up with one. I know. But, or anything like with cleanliness, there, I can go on and on, like the dog, the this, the that, like, yes, I'm not having dinner at your house. But it's interesting because it's like, yeah, where does that come from? Where it's, we just had a Black dentist on our podcast, and she was talking about how people like to brush their teeth like they're scrubbing a Brillo pad, and it's actually all about soft brushing. And I'm like, oh, wow, why are we so aggressive with the cleanliness? It's something to think about, because there's no one who's cleaner than a Black person. It's true. At the same time, yeah, we take so much pride in that, but sometimes it's not really helpful because we also suffer from things like dry skin and all of that.
Right.
Yeah. So speaking of all these gadgets and gadgets, my same friend group, we had a bachelorette party and one of them brought these yoni eggs, and we were talking about... Dr. Heather's like,
y'all
rolling
really
her eyes.
Have me out here.
I know.
Like, so, Lord, y'all just want me to slide off my chair, don't y'all?
So the yoni eggs, like, there was talk of vag steaming, the yoni pearls. Like, okay, right, based on your face, I'm hearing that this is not a good idea. Which isn't my first time hearing that it's not a good idea. So tell me,
it's really not.
Okay,
y'all, like. there are a few things that I'm like, you really just like, if you like, I'm like, choose your own adventure. I'm here for you for the ride. Like, and I won't even like come for you unless you want me to come for you. Like, if you want that energy, I can give it to you. But I don't lead with that. I lead with things happen. You're going to do what you're going to do. And we live and we learn, right? And it's like, I've done a whole bunch of messed up things. We can get into that at another point. But especially pre like med school, where it's like, let's try that. But those yonis, ooh, child, I have seen some things. I've had to fish them out, y'all. Oh. I've had to, yeah, because people put them in there and they're like, I can't get them out. And I'm like, God. And they're like, and I'm like, I have a spell, it hurts, whatever. And so I've had people come in for like emergency appointments for us to, you know, go and fish them out. People who get raging infect, like of all of the things that I have like seen people get infections from, some of the yoni, post yoni infections,
wow,
are like, they're, it's yeast and bacterial vaginosis or BV, but they are rough. Like it's
dang,
not pleasant. And then like, I don't know if you guys have seen those ads, especially like, I mean, they're all on Instagram and stuff, where they're like, look at all of the toxins that have shed from my like vagina.
No.
And I'm like, and it's like pieces of flesh, right? It looks like. No. And I'm like, y'all, that is not toxins. That is actually like the top layer of the inside of your vagina, like coming off in an inflammatory reaction.
Oh my God.
Like, that's not good. Like, that is not like a, not what should happen. So it's like, you're not relieving yourselves of purging yourselves of any toxins, relieving yourself of any toxins. There's claims that like the yoni pearls and stuff like that are good for things like endometriosis, fertility, fibroids, all of that stuff, which a lot of Black women, we suffer from. And because like one big thing that we need to know, especially fibroids and fertility issues, we have a higher rate of infertility than our white counterparts. We have a higher rate of fibroids than our white counterparts. We don't know how bad our endometriosis is because it's so underdiagnosed mm-hmm. in our community. So we're trying to self-medicate a lot, right?
Yeah.
And so yoni eggs are used for our yoni pearls. And they will not treat those things because what's in those herbs that are in there just have not been shown to be helpful for those things. And instead, a lot of times people are having chemical reactions in their vaginas to it. And it's not good. And like the best case scenario out of it is that it won't harm you and that you just spent the money. The worst case scenario is that it can cause you to have some like chronic pain, infection, things like that. And vaginal steaming, this one is interesting for me because like, again, people put herbs and spices in there, right? And it's like, again, these herbs and spices, often essential oils, all of that stuff, most times are like irritants to there because like they cause allergic reactions. But even if you were just going to use a steaming pot of water, right? Just make sure you don't put your vagina that close to it because people have gotten burnt before from it and things like that from the steam. But typically it's not going to harm you if there's no like chemical irritants in there, but it may be helpful for pain relief. Like if you're having your period or like if you're someone who like suffers from chronic pain, but it's not really like going to do anything magical. Like, you know, it's not going to cure your fibroids. It's not going to cure your chronic pelvic pain. It's not going to do those things, but you have to weigh the risk because there's a possibility that you can harm yourself by doing it. I just usually think there's other ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, in my mind, the idea of steaming, I'm just thinking like moisture and yeast infections.
basically.
Yeah.
So that's the other part of it is that it's like a lot of times people end up with yeast infections because anytime you kind of alter that climate down there, the vagina and vulva, your genitals, they're very picky. Like they're just not happy unless you just kind of leave them alone, let them do their thing, and then make little adjustments here and there as you need to.
We also got a lot of questions about hormonal birth control. And I mean, you know, this is, I feel like this has always been a hot topic. Oh, yeah. How do you address safety concerns? Because there's just so many claims about hormonal birth control and like the possible effects that it can have for short-term and long-term. So how do you navigate those conversations?
So what I think is being very open and honest, right? So I think one of the big issues kind of about extremes of this side, like kind of like the medical extreme and the like pseudoscience extreme, is that like everybody thinks that there's like one truth or one answer that I don't think that's actually true. Like birth control is a very personal decision, or like hormonal contraceptives, because you can use them for different reasons. There's a lot of people react to them different ways, right? And people need them for different things. And I think the issue is that like from the medical side, right, is that we don't necessarily address that when we're talking to patients about putting them on these things or suggesting it, right? So a lot of times docs will say, like, you come in, you're like, my periods are really weird. Like, you know, I don't have regular periods. I just need, you know, like, and I'm having pain too. Like, what should I do? And they're like, here's this pill. You know, it's birth control, so you won't get pregnant too, yay. And like, it's going to solve all your problems. And that's it. And they send you home. And then if you're thinking about it a little bit, you read the packet and you're like, I can get blood clots and I can get this and cancer and blah, blah, blah. What the hell? You know what I mean? And then like, because that's my favorite thing, where it's like, because my favorite thing is like when I even tell my patients what, like, kind of like all of the things, and then they go home and get the packet and then they read it and then they come back and they're like, and I'm like, girl, I told you what was it, what you're going to see. Like, so sometimes even when people are getting it, they're not like digesting everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to be very honest, right? And say like, hey, you know, let's look at what your goals are. Like, is your goal like not having kids right now? Is your goal like, you know, you have PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and like you're not having regular periods, and like maybe we saw some abnormal cells in the lining of your uterus, and like we need to address this. This is why we're doing it, but these are possible side effects, and this is the rate of these side effects. Because I think what happens on the other side, kind of like the pseudoscience side, is that the rate of side effects happening is blown up more than it is, where it's like, yes, birth control pills increase your risk of clots, right? But it's not so high that we feel like it shouldn't be offered. And it's way lower than getting pregnant, right? So it's like, if the option is like, let everybody just get pregnant versus like be on birth control pills, if we're like looking at, let's say, clots, right? It's actually safer to be on birth control than it is to get pregnant, because you're more likely to get a blood clot from being pregnant than being on birth control. Or let's say something like breast cancer, right? You're like way less likely to get breast cancer on like birth control pills, like, you know what I mean, than like, you know, not. So like, there's a lot of times where we're not like, there's the proper equivalence is not being looked at on kind of like the way extreme side of being like birth controls is really bad. And then in terms of like some of the things where people have like changes in their mood or changes in things like that, I think acknowledging that that's a thing is important, because I feel like doctors play that down. They're like, no, it's probably not the birth control. And it's like, yeah, it really could be. And what I say is like, let's take you off and see what happens. And if it gets better, then it was for you. It was the birth control, and that's fine. And you don't need to be on it. But for other people, they don't have those issues and they do well. So I feel like people need to realize it's an individual situation, and you have to weigh your pros and your cons. And not everything is going to be perfect. Medications are not perfect. And as long as you know what you're getting yourself into, it's okay. But the problem is when like no one's being really honest about it.
Yeah, I love that approach. Because I feel like that way you can make an educated choice on things. Because I do think, like, for many of us, we're started on birth control at a very early age. We don't even understand what the hell's going on. And it's like, oh, you have acne, you know, your period suck. Let's put you on birth. And we don't really even understand, like, what the underlying cause is. And, you know, for some people, they're on birth control for decades. And then, you know, and this is, like, really all they know. For someone who's like, okay, well, I want to, you know, consider maybe getting pregnant, do you recommend, like, allowing some time off of the birth control so the body can adjust? Is there a recommended time frame? Or are you just like, okay, just get off and start trying?
I usually say, if once you get off birth control, I can't guarantee you that you're not going to get pregnant right away. Mm-hmm. It happens way more than people think, because those people don't really actually talk about it. That's another thing. People who have issues with stuff tend to be the loudest, right?
Oh, and, yeah. Google reviews.
Think about it. Google reviews. Yelp, come on. Like, are you going to write a Yelp review for something that was okay? No. Unless you're one of those people who has, like, you know, who's like the expert Yelpers or whatever, who like make a coin out of just saying stuff, right? But if you're like a normal person who just goes on Yelp, and but then you had a really either great experience that you're like, oh my God, I need to tell people, or I had a really awful experience, you're gonna put that on Yelp. But if it was just like, you know what, that was fine, you're not usually gonna say it, right? And so the people who have a hard time getting pregnant after birth control tend to talk about it, right? But sometimes, because also there's like stigma behind like unintended and unplanned pregnancies, people tend not to say, yeah, you know, I really wasn't trying to have this baby right now, but you know, I got off of birth control and then it just happened. And it happens a lot more quickly than some people would think. So I always say, hey, you can try to say you're giving yourself time, but if you're not on any form of birth control, and you're waiting for it to kind of flesh out your body, there's a possibility that you can get pregnant in that time that you are waiting for it to flesh out your body, meaning that there probably wasn't really an issue to begin with. And so that's the reason why we say, once you come off of birth control, all bets are off. Like, you can totally get pregnant. And something people need to understand is, like, when you get put on birth control initially, like when you're a teenager or whatever, when you're having like acne issues maybe, or irregular periods, it could be a sign of an underlying issue like PCOS or something like that, that you don't even know about at that point, and maybe you aren't tested for. So when you're on your birth control, doing okay, whatever, and then you come off of it and now you're having trouble, it may not have been the birth control that's causing your issue. It's that underlying condition that the birth control was treating that is now presenting itself, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's what I like to tell people, because I love to do this fact-finding mission with my patients, where it's like, they come to me, they're like, I've been off my birth control for 6 months. I haven't had a period, right? What's going on? The birth control broke me. And I'm like, think back 15 years ago, right? When you were like, when your mama took you to the doctor and then all of a sudden you have these pills you have to take every day. What was going on in the first place that they put you on that pill? And sometimes people have to really think about it. And they're like, yeah, I remember I wasn't getting my period very often. And I'm like, And then we start doing tests and I'm like, you have PCOS. That is why you haven't had a period in 6 months and you can't get pregnant.
Ooh, so much to think about. Well, we have a fire round. These are also questions people submitted, and
I'm like, fire round. This sounds like,
yes. So like, this, it's not. We'll just take a deep breath. No big deal. Okay. So we're just going to ask you a bunch of questions. We have 7 minutes and we have like 10 questions. So we have basically 30 seconds per question. Okay.
Okay.
Menstrual cups, safe or not safe?
Definitely safe. I use one myself.
Okay.
It's not going to hurt you.
Okay.
Great.
I keep getting yeast infections after using sex toys. Tips.
Wash your toys, y'all. Wash them. Wash them. Rinse them off really well.
Is there a type of soap? Is it the Cetaphil again?
Yeah, I would do Cetaphil or some sort of disinfecting wipe, but then wash it with Cetaphil after. Mm-hmm.
What can be impacting the smell of my vagina?
Lots of things. Dehydration usually is the biggest culprit, though. So drink your water, ladies. Drink up.
Oh, that's a good
one. Interesting.
Yeah, I remember the dentist was saying that that can also cause like the bad breath. So
yep.
Yeah, it's hydration's a big one. Okay, what's a normal level of discharge? Is there a way to decrease discharge?
Let your body do what she's doing. Like, and there is no normal level. Normal for you may not be normal for me. So let her breathe. Let her discharge.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
What are these? You're doing great. You're doing great, sweetie. Okay. What are tips for postpartum vag health?
So moisturizing. So your vagina can get really, really dry. So like if you want to get back on the horse, do any sort of penetrative intercourse or things like that, lubricants are your best friends. Like please, please, please do that. If you're really close postpartum and you had any sort of kind of trauma to the area, there's peri bottles, which is basically squirting water there when you're peeing or anything like that. That's more helpful than using like toilet paper. Like a mini bidet.
When you say moisturizing, do you mean using like an over-the-counter moisturizer, or you said lube too? Tell me more. Like, is there a brand you recommend, and is the lube just for sex, or is it for the moisture during the day?
So they actually have vaginal moisturizers that are like right next to lube at any pharmacy or anything like that. Those you may feel like if you're feeling dryness like throughout the day, like, but especially with intercourse, lubricant will be your friend postpartum. It's dry because of your hormonal state. It's not you. You're not broken. You don't hate your partner, maybe, I don't know, but hopefully you don't. And it's not that, it's literally your hormones are making you dry. So if it's something that bothers you when you're not having intercourse, there's vaginal moisturizers that you can find over the counter that are right next to the lubes. And then there's actual lubricants that for intercourse or any sort of play.
Okay. Speaking of dryness, what are some vag changes to look out for as we get older?
So vag changes as you get older, you might notice the labia get smaller. You may notice that you do get drier. Sex may become a little bit more uncomfortable. So you would need a lot more lube. You may see changes in your libido. A lot of people see lessening or lowering of their libido, but some people actually see an increase. Small portion of people, but it happens. But those are the biggest things, hot flashes, night sweats, things like that. But in terms of the vaginal area, it's usually dryness and you may see light get smaller.
Yeah. What are signs with your menstrual blood flow that indicate something is wrong?
When you are soaking more, if you use pads, soaking more than a pad an hour. If you're passing huge clots, if you feel dizzy, lightheaded with your periods, things like that. If you're using a menstrual cup, if you have to change it out multiple times a day because it's filling up. If you're skipping periods, if you're having spotting in between periods, anything like that, or things just change from what it used to be like. So let's say you used to have a period that lasted 3 days, now it's 8 days. Come see us. We'll check you out.
Okay, good. Reoccurring yeast or yeast infections or bacterial vaginosis, what should I do?
Go see a doctor. Honestly, it's going to be a journey. It's not going to be something that can be fixed immediately. And so just understand that you will need to be patient, but it's a need to have a close relationship with your doctor about to treat, okay? Because it sucks and I'm sorry that you're going through it, but it's going to take a while for it to go away.
Yeah. What are some fertility tests that every woman should get?
So I recommend if you are not having regular periods or you're over the age of 35 and been trying for 6 months or longer to get pregnant and haven't been able to, the test that you can get, and I will rapid-firely tell them, offer you follicular stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, estradiol, which is estrogen. They should check your hemoglobin A1C to see if you have diabetes or something like that or PCOS. They should check your progesterone. And depending on where you go, AMH, so anti-Müllerian hormone, those are like kind of basic ones they should check to see what's going on with your fertility. Also, an ultrasound can help as well, just to see if there's anything going on like fibroids. And hysterosalpingogram, HSG, that checks to see if your tubes are blocked. That's kind of the basics of your infertility workup.
Amazing. Ovarian cysts, are they common? Do they impact certain people more than others?
So ovarian cysts are very common. And actually, it's a result of you ovulating, but that little egg doesn't burst out. So that cyst or follicle grows and grows and grows and grows, fills up with fluid, sometimes blood. A lot of times it just causes pain. And then if it twists, if the ovary twists on itself, that can be a surgical emergency. But for most people, they just kind of come and go as they will. Obviously, if you're having any pelvic pain or concerns, again, come see us. We can help you out.
Last question, and that was amazing. Brand of lube, do you have a favorite? And does it have to be water-based?
Water-based is good in general, but like you can also, it depends on what kind of play you're using. So like for example, if you're doing something that's going to take a while, or for some people say for like anal sex, using silicone-based lube is better, but you don't want to use silicone-based lube on silicone toys, which are most of the toys out there. You need water-based lube because you will ruin your silicone-based toys. Mm-hmm. Brands of lube, there's a lot. Astroglide, I actually used to have a relationship with them. I don't, but I still recommend them because they're good. And then just basically anything that doesn't have glycerin in it, because glycerin is like sugar and yeasties like sugar. So stay away from that.
You did so good, Heather.
Yay. Oh, that was amazing. Yay.
That was the end of our program. You killed it.
You killed it. Killed.
That was fun.
Yes. You're so amazing.
This is stuff I like to talk about all day. So this worked.
Good.
Yeah. So tell us, like, for our listeners who want to learn more about you, I know you said you have a podcast, which you might start recording for again. So like, where can people find you and stay in touch?
I'm on Instagram, TikTok, Dr. Heather Irwinda, MD. That's my handle. My podcast is Dr. Heather's Advisory Cervix, like the cervix that is at the top of your vagina. Okay, because I'm a gynecologist. And some episodes that are already good. It's like just lots of just basic GYN stuff that I think is relatable. And I'm probably going to start it up again soon. So yeah, check me out.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Food Heaven podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to connect with us online. We're most active on the gram at Food Heaven, but we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Food Heaven Show. If you like this podcast, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend.
Yep, our podcast is released every Wednesday, and each week we take a deep dive into topics like health at every size, food and culture, intuitive eating, mental health, and body acceptance. If you're looking for a sustainable and inclusive path to wellness, come hang out with us to learn how to take care of yourself from the inside out. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.